The Reformation fires that were igniting in places such as Wittenberg and Zurich in the 16th century could not be kept out. Soon, sparks began to drift across the English Channel. Hi, I'm Ligonier Teaching Fellow Dr. Stephen Lawson, and I invite you to join me and Dr. Stephen Nichols, September 29 through October 5, for a Ligonier study tour as we travel across London, Cambridge, Windsor, and Oxford to explore God's work through the English Reformation. During our seven-day stay at the Royal Horse Guards, we'll visit the site of the White Horse Inn, tour the beautiful Westminster Abbey, and other iconic locations. We hope you'll join us for this special opportunity to walk through history and discover heroism, bravery, and the great legacy of the English Reformers. To learn more or to register today, visit ligoniertours.com.
Today on Renewing Your Mind.
It is appointed unto man once to die. It is written in the calendar of heaven, a day in which we die. And what has been the focus of parts one and two of Pilgrim's Progress is the great gospel evangelical question: are you ready to die?
Well, what about that? Are you ready to die? That's a question all of us consider at some point in our lives, or at least we should. Scripture should be our primary source in answering that question, but John Bunyan's literary masterpiece, The Pilgrim's Progress, is also helpful in that regard. Let's continue our guided tour of this great book with our teacher, Dr. Derek Thomas.
Well, welcome back to Lecture 19, the final lecture in this series of studies on Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress, and the seventh in our study of part two of the story of Christiana and the four boys. And we left our last study with Christiana crossing the river and bidding farewell before she did so to various members of her party, and especially to her children, and giving charge to Mr. Valiant for Truth to take care of her boys. Well, these are deathbed scenes that Bunyan is referring to in this final section of part two of Pilgrim's Progress. And one by one they go, one by one they're called, and a messenger comes and bids them go to the celestial city. Immediately after the calling of Christiana, there comes a call for Mr. Ready to Halt. And he bequeaths his crutches to his son because he had no need of them where he was going. And when it comes to the calling of Mr. Despondency, there is a wonderful section here. Mr. Despondency has been dealing with issues of melancholy. When days had many of them passed away, Mr. Despondency was sent for a post was come and brought this message to him: "Trembling man, these are to summon thee to be ready with thy king by the next Lord's day to shout for joy for thy deliverance from all thy doubtings." And said the messenger, "That my message is true, take this for a proof." So he gave him the grasshopper to be a burden unto him. Now Mr. Despondency's daughter, whose name was Much Afraid, said, when she heard what was done, that she would go with her father. Then Mr. Despondency said to his friends, "Myself and my daughter, you know what we have been and how troublesome we have behaved ourselves in every company. My will and my daughter's is that our desponds and slavish fears be by no man ever received from the day of our departure forever." He sees these troublings of his, these despondencies of his, these bouts of melancholy and depression that he has, he and his daughter. He sees them as so many ghosts, he refers to them. And he's entertained them all of his life, Even during the days that he's been a pilgrim, he has been assaulted by these things. And he wants to make sure that nobody picks them up when he leaves. He's going to leave them here, but he doesn't want anyone else to take care of them. He wants them left behind. He's talking about spiritual melancholy and depression and darkness. Puritans were familiar with this. They dealt with issues of spiritual despondency, and they dealt with it along biblical lines, and they sought to counsel Christians, especially who suffered from spiritual melancholy. And the calling then of Mr. Despondency has something very interesting to tell us. Now, one by one, they go, except for the boys and their wives. And there's a hint at the end that Bunyan may be tempted to write a part three to Pilgrim's Progress, the story now of the sons and their wives, and probably, if there had been a part three, the grandchildren. But of course, Bunyan died in 1688. He was born in 1628, and he died in 1688, just a few years after the publication of part two of Pilgrim's Progress. You know, for the Puritans, death was not the great unmentionable. Death was the climax of life. Death was something that you prepared for. They were familiar with it. Most of their children had died in infancy in the 17th century. Disease of one kind or another, plague, influenza, all kinds of things, would take hundreds, perhaps thousands of people in a short space of time. Life expectancy was not terribly long in the 17th century. And perhaps more pertinently, and it puts the 17th century and Pilgrim's Progress somewhat at a distance from most of our experience, most people died at home. That's not true today. There are many, many Christians in their 20s, 30s, 40s who've never actually seen someone die. People die in hospital, they die elsewhere, they die out of sight, they die without preparation. In Bunyan's time, people died at home. So you were there, you heard the death pangs, you ministered to them in the watches of the night, you read to them, prayed with them, you watched the body decay, you were present at death. And it would be very unusual in the 17th century to grow up to be an adult and not have witnessed many deaths in that time. And I think that puts this narrative perhaps at a considerable distance from where we are today. And I meet 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds who've never actually seen anybody die. They've had deaths in their family, but they've never watched anybody. They've never been by a bedside. They've never listened to the last words of someone who dies. So last words in the 17th century were very important. They were things to remember and write down and to treasure. So Bunyan has each one of these characters say something memorable and remarkable at the time of their death. Christiana, we saw in our last study, "I come, Lord, to be with thee and bless thee." Those were her last words. Mr. Ready to Halt, as he bequeaths his crutches to his son because he had no need of them, he says, "Welcome, life." Mr. Feeble Mind's last words were, "Hold out faith and patience." Mr. Despondency, "Farewell night, welcome day." How appropriate for somebody who suffers from depression. And Mr. Valiant for Truth, and we'll see him in a minute. Mr. Valiant for Truth, "Death, where is thy sting? Grave, where is thy victory?" And Bunyan has a wonderful description here. He says, "After this, it was noised abroad that Mr. Valiant for Truth was taken with a summons by the same post as the other. and had this for a token that the summons was true, that his pitcher was broken at the fountain. This is a reference to Ecclesiastes 12:6, a reference to death, just as the previous reference to Mr. Despondency that we read earlier about the grasshopper to be a burden unto him. Again, that's from the same chapter, Ecclesiastes chapter 12. The pitcher then was broken at the fountain. When he understood it, right, he understands that this word that comes to him is a confirmation that he's going to die. He called for his friends and told them of it. Then said he, I'm going to go to my father's, and though with great difficulty I am got hither, yet now I do not repent me of all the trouble I have been at to arrive where I am. My sword I give to him that shall succeed me in my pilgrimage, and my courage and skill to him that can get it. My marks and scars I carry with me to be a witness for me that I have fought his battles, who now will be my rewarder. When the day that he must go hence was come, many accompanied him to the riverside, into which, as he went, he said, Death, where is thy sting? And as he went down deeper, he said, Grave, where is thy victory? So he passed over, and all the trumpets sounded for him on the other side. And then there's an even longer description of the taking of Mr. Standfast. I want to read this to you. It's a wonderful description. There came forth a summons from Mr. Standfast. This Mr. Standfast was he whom the rest of the pilgrims found upon his knees in enchanted ground. For the post brought it him open in his hands, the contents whereof were that he must prepare for a change of life, for his master was not willing that he should be so far from him any longer. At this Mr. Standfast was put into a muse. Nay, said the messenger, you need not doubt the truth of my message, for here is a token of the truth thereof. The wheel is broken at the cistern. Ecclesiastes 12:6 again. Then he called to him Mr. Greatheart, who was their guide, and said unto him, Sir, although it was not my hap to be much in your good company during the days of my pilgrimage, they'd only met in the last few pages of this narrative, yet since the time I knew you, you have been profitable to me. When I came from home, I left behind me a wife and five small children. Let me entreat you at your return, for I know that you go and return to your master's house in hopes that you may yet be a conductor to more of the holy pilgrims, that you send to my family and let them be acquainted with all that hath and shall happen unto me. Tell them, moreover, of my happy arrival to this place and to the present late blessed condition I am in. Tell them also of Christian and Christiana, his wife, and how she and her children came after her husband. Tell them also of what a happy end she made and whither she is gone. I have little or nothing to send to my family unless it be prayers and tears for them, of which it will suffice that you acquaint them, if peradventure they may prevail. When Mr. Standfast had thus set things in order, and the time being come for him to haste him away, he also went down to the river. Now there was a great calm at that time in the river. Wherefore Mr. Standfast, when he was about halfway in, stood a while and talked with his companions that had waited upon him thither. And he said, The river has been a terror to many. Yea, the thoughts of it also have often frightened me. But now methinks I stand easy. My foot is fixed upon that upon which the feet of the priests that bear the Ark of the Covenant stood while Israel went over this Jordan. The waters indeed are to the palate bitter and to the stomach cold, yet the thoughts of what I am going to and of the conduct that awaits me on the other side do lie as a glowing coal in my heart. I see myself at the end of my journey. My toilsome days are ended. I'm going to see that head that was crowned with thorns, that face which was spit upon for me. I have formerly lived in hearsay and faith, but now I go where I shall live by sight and shall be with him, in whose company I delight myself. I have loved to hear my Lord spoken of, and wherever I have seen the print of his shoe in the earth, there I have coveted to set my foot to. His name has been to me a civet box, yea, sweeter than all perfumes. His voice to me has been most sweet, and his countenance more desired than they that have most desired the light of the sun. His word I did use to gather for my food and for antidotes against my faintings. He hath held me and hath kept me from mine iniquities. Yea, my steps hath he strengthened in his way. Now while he was thus in discourse, his countenance changed. His strong men bowed under him. And after he had said, "Take me, for I come unto thee," he ceased to be seen of them. But glorious as it was to see how open region was filled with horses and chariots and trumpeters and pipers, with singers and players upon stringed instruments, to welcome the pilgrims as they went up and followed one another to the beautiful gate of the city. And as for Christian's children, the four boys that Christiana brought with her, with their wives and children, I did not stay where I was till they were gone over. Also, since I came away, I heard one say that they were yet alive, and so would be for the increase of the church in that place where they were for a time. Shall it be my lot to go that way again? He's hinting at a third part to Pilgrim's Progress. Shall it be my lot to go that way again? I may give those that desire it an account of what I here am silent about. Meantime, I bid my reader adieu. Well, those are very moving words, aren't they, from Mr. Standfast, approaching death with great courage, great fortitude, great faith. Do you notice several things? Not just last words, but an act of preparation. The Puritans believed that you should prepare for death, that it shouldn't catch you unawares. Now, there is such a thing as sudden death, of course, but that we should think about death, that we should remind ourselves that here we have no continuing city, but we seek one which is to come, whose builder and maker is God. Now, the Puritans urged that we live with our bags packed and ready to go. Shouldn't set roots down too deeply in this world, because this is not my home. Heaven is my home. The New Jerusalem is my home. But Puritans like Bunyan would say that we need to sit loose to the world, not form too strong attachments to the things of this world. But especially for Bunyan, and it's true in part one, and it's especially, I think, true in part two of the story, the way each one of these makes a kind of preparation. They close off relationships here in order that they would prepare themselves for the place that they are going. Each one is summoned. Each one gets a call from the King of Kings. They get a letter. It comes in the post, in the mail, if you like. A mailman, a deliveryman brings it. And it's a letter addressed to each one of them personally. And then the description, especially at the end there, of Mr. Standfast, as he makes his way across the river, and the way in which there's that scene of just extraordinary celebration, trumpeters and singers, and a sense of jubilation from across the river as yet another one of God's children is brought home safely and delivered from all of the temptations and allurements of the world and the flesh and the devil. No sting in the tale of part two as there was in part one. Remember how part one ended? Just as you're looking at the celestial city and those above and the shining ones above and the trumpeters and so on. And then all of a sudden there's Mr. Talkative. And he has made it across the river on a boat. And then he doesn't have his scroll or parchment. And he's taken. The king bids the shining ones to take him to a door in the side of a hill. And then Bunyan ends part one with that very alarming statement that he saw that there was a gate that led to hell, even from the very gate of the celestial city, even on the other side of death. And before entering into the celestial city, there was a pathway that led to hell. Now, Bunyan, I don't think, has lost his belief in hell for one minute, but he does end part two without a reference to that. I think for Bunyan, death is a date in the diary of Jesus. That's how he would view it. It is appointed unto man once to die. It is written in the calendar of heaven, a day in which we die, every one of us. And what has been the focus of parts one and two of Pilgrim's Progress is the great gospel evangelical question. Are you ready to die? The question that Thomas Goodwin put to a 12-year-old prospective student making his way to Oxford University and to Magdalen College, are you ready to die? And the 12-year-old ran from the room in terror, thinking he was about to be killed. But he was a Puritan, and he was asking the question, do you know the gospel? Are you in union and communion with the Lord Jesus Christ? Have you repented of your sin? Have you embraced Christ by faith alone? Have you looked to him who is your substitute and sin bearer? Have you seen what Jesus offers by way of double imputation? He takes our sin and he credits us with his obedience, his perfect, spotless righteousness. I think Pilgrim's Progress is an evangelistic book. It's meant to teach, it's meant to instruct, it's meant to be a book read in the home. I trust these lessons have kindled in you a desire to do what Augustine heard over a hedge one day, tolle lege, take up and read. It was the beginning of his own conversion. And here is a book that for centuries, since its first publication in the 17th century, has been the most published book other than the Bible in the English language. And this generation has a responsibility, I think, but a great, great privilege to take up one of the great books of English literature and one of the great books of Christian literature and to read for profit. From a pastor of souls who went through extraordinary suffering, 12 years in prison, losing his firstborn, Mary, the blind daughter, while he was in prison, and then emerging to be a pastor and producing these two volumes, parts one and two of Pilgrim's Progress, just two works of about 70 different books that Bunyan wrote in the course of his lifetime. I challenge you to read Pilgrim's Progress, and I challenge you to profit greatly from it.
That's Dr. Derek Thomas here on Renewing Your Mind, wrapping up his guided tour of John Bunyan's The Pilgrim's Progress. I hope Dr. Thomas's challenge to read this classic is one we'll take seriously. I have to admit, it's a difficult book to read, but once you get started, you'll find it easier. There are confusing portions of the book, but that's why Dr. Thomas's series is a great companion to the book. That's why we commend this series to you. You can contact us with your gift of any amount to Ligonier Ministries, and we'll send you the full 19-part set. You can donate online when you go to renewingyourmind.org, or you can simply call us at 800-435-4255. 4343. Let me repeat that. Our web address is renewingyourmind.org and our toll-free telephone number, 800-435-4343. Our goal at Ligonier Ministries is to equip growing Christians to know what they believe, why they believe it, how to live it, and how to share it. We do that by providing trustworthy Bible teaching in a variety of forms, books, audio and video teaching series like the one we heard today, conferences, as well as our monthly Bible study magazine, Table Talk. Dr. R.C. Sproul said Table Talk exists to help establish us in the Word, to deepen our understanding of God and apply this knowledge to our daily living. Daily devotions make up more than half the content of Table Talk each month, and each issue has a theme with articles that address specific topics. You can learn more and subscribe at tabletalkmagazine.com. Next Saturday on Renewing Your Mind, we begin a very popular series by Dr. Sproul. Join us Saturday as we feature Defending Your Faith, an overview of classical apologetics. We hope you'll join us next week on Renewing Your Mind.